I'm George Flynn. Welcome to In-Depth TV. Today, my guest, Steve Landy, friend of mine for years and years, but he's got some information about something that each and everyone can understand, and that's headache. Steve, welcome to the show, and tell us a little bit about yourself and tell us how you got into this specialty of headaches.
Well, George, first, it's great to see you.
Good to see you again.
We go a long ways back. And the medical profession has changed so much.
It has.
During the times we've known each other. You know, headaches are extremely interesting. I got involved primarily in headache practice through my neurology practice when I started with some neurosurgeons, as you well remember.
I remember.
Years ago. And they asked me if I'd run a headache clinic. And I just had no idea what that would entail. And what happened was I was absolutely inundated with, with very complicated headache cases.
It's not just take two aspirin and call me in the morning.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. It's so much more. And you know, as a resident, and I did my neurology residency at Vanderbilt, I remember there wasn't much going on in the outpatient clinic, but there was a ton going on in the hospital.
Right.
You know, people were coming in the emergency room with really bad headaches. And what we tried to do is rule out bad or more malignant causes of headache
right.
in the emergency room, such as brain tumors or subarachnoid hemorrhage or meningitis, you know, bad things that you
right.
could potentially die from. So what I found out in private practice in the outpatient clinic is these patients rarely come in to the outpatient clinic. And what we see primarily is migraine, and it's absolutely devastating to these
right.
people. So I'd say 80 to 90% of the patients I see in our headache clinic here have migraine headache, and well over 50% of them are extremely disabled. They're missing work. They're going to the emergency room from time to time. And in fact, the most common reason, and I didn't know this then, for a patient to present to the emergency room with a headache is migraine.
Well, for our viewing audience, people get headaches. They get sinus headaches. They get all kind of force tension headaches. What is the difference in that and a migraine? Because if we define it, and then somebody may want to, you know, we want to talk about how you treat migraine. So do you just, you know, lie down in a dark room with a cold towel on your head, or what do you do? But first of all, what is a migraine?
Yeah, migraine is an episodic disabling headache. Associated with nausea and light and sound sensitivity. So during the intervals of headache freedom, the patient's usually fine. It can be a progressive neurological problem, meaning it becomes less and less episodic with time and can become chronic. Mm-hmm. And within the last 10 years, we define chronic migraine as a migraine patient that has 15 or more days a month of headache lasting over 4 hours, with half those days being migraine days.
Okay.
Meaning those migraine days are associated with nausea and light and sound sensitivity with their headaches.
So just because you don't have the flashing lights and things like that before the headache doesn't mean it's not a migraine.
Absolutely, George. And that's something extremely interesting, and I think a myth actually out there in society, and even articulated sometimes by pretty good doctors, that you need to have an aura before you can be diagnosed with migraine headache, some type of focal neurological symptomatology that's usually visual that precedes the migraine headache. Less than half of migraine patients ever have aura.
Okay.
So we're looking to diagnose migraine by disabling headache, and the thought is it can be unilateral, bilateral, throbbing, non-throbbing, and in the past we thought they all had to be unilateral and throbbing, and that's not even so. So what goes on in a migraine patient is they have a susceptibility to the development of migraine headaches. There's an abnormal area or cellular abnormality which turns on and activates the migraine mechanism, which then activates the pain. And migraine is not just a headache, so you have nausea, light and sound sensitivity,
right.
and some of these patients have aura. Now, during the pain phase, which usually is the most disabling component of migraine, we have a blood vessel that dilates, a peripheral nerve that's activated, and there's release of these chemicals we call neuropeptides. that cause inflammation. And in fact, if you were to peel back the scalp, drill a hole through the cranium, which wouldn't look so pretty, and look down upon the covering of the brain, which we call the meninges, it would look like hives.
Okay.
A lot of swelling, a lot of release of chemicals that cause pain, inflammation. And if you kind of think about it from what we call a pathophysiologic standpoint, you can understand why take two aspirin, go to sleep may not work so well.
Right.
You know, we have migraine-specific medications. These are designer-type drugs that we've actually designed with migraine in mind. From an abortive pharmacologic standpoint, which means you take them at the onset of the migraine headache, and then we also are in the process of developing designer prophylactic treatments, which can inhibit the activation of the migraine generator.
So you would take them every day?
Prophylaxis would be every day. Yes, to decrease the frequency, intensity, and duration of the migraines so the patient doesn't have to take as much as needed medication and improve their quality of life. Something else that, George, I found is incredibly interesting and I never knew is the comorbidity of migraine. It seems like the more severe the migraine patient is, meaning if they have chronic migraine, this 10% of migraine patients that have headache more days than not,
right,
they have a lot of comorbidity, meaning they have depression, anxiety, irritable bowel syndrome, mitral valve prolapse, fibromyalgia, and then it becomes very challenging, not just from a diagnostic standpoint, but I think more challenging from a treatment standpoint to help them, because you have to consider the whole patient then, not just
right,
the headache
right,
component.
And that's the beauty of it, is you understand this and you treat the whole patient. There are other types of headaches. There's a tension headache, and as I remember, it's, some people even use, and people normally think of Botox as a cosmetic drug. Do you use that now, or is that passe with the trigger point injection?
Yeah, I mean, you're exactly right. I mean, there's many kinds of other headaches, and we have an international classification of headache and have about 300 headache types in there.
Oh, my gosh.
And one is tension. The good news about tension headache, and a lot of patients that have migraine think they have tension headache, and a lot of patients that have migraine think they have sinus headache, tension headaches is not a disabling headache. And so those patients do quite well as outpatients. They take something over the counter and it gives them relief and they do well. But there are so many other types of headache, cluster headache, of course, brain tumor headache. But regarding Botox, it's a fascinating treatment. And just in the last year or two, I think I've found out how it works.
Mm-hmm.
How it works on muscle spasm, how it works on wrinkles or aesthetic indications is probably through the release of a chemical that relaxes the muscle. How it works on migraine is inhibiting the chemical that comes out of the nerve terminal that causes pain.
Okay.
So it's a different mechanism of action, which I believe is somewhat migraine specific. So it works very well and is not passe. It is ongoing as the only FDA-approved treatment for these chronic migraine sufferers. And I have a whole lot of migraine patients that have responded extremely well.
So you basically see the very disabling forms of headache. You see not just somebody that has a headache once a month and says, I take some kind of pill and it goes away. How do you see people, and what kind of things do you do to work them up and find out what's wrong with them?
Well, what's amazing is I think what drives patients with headache is not necessarily the headache pain as much as their disability. So they can't go to work.
Right.
They can't function normally with their family. Their life is just in havoc because they can't make plans
right,
to go to work, to mm-hmm, enjoy things. So these are the patients that call, and these are the patients I see, and they call for an appointment, they come in. The majority of the patients have seen other doctors before, very discouraged. frequently misdiagnosed as sinus or tension headache. In fact, 80%, this is interesting, of patients that think they have sinus headache and tension headache actually have migraine.
Okay.
And that's published data. So the first thing we want to do is make the diagnosis. We want to consider the whole patient and maybe their comorbidities, and then give an appropriate treatment plan. And again, the majority have migraines. So what we're looking from a migraine standpoint to do is to consider non-pharmacologic approaches, you know, what the patient can do to help themselves, and I want them to get actively involved in their understanding of migraine. Because they don't have tension headache, they don't have sinus headache, they have migraine headache. And then we'll go ahead and start a medication plan with abortive pharmacologic treatment and prophylactic pharmacologic treatment if they have frequent disabling migraine. And it's kind of an incremental thing. You start with something relatively simple, unless they've already been there and done that, right, and then move forward and incrementally improve their care.
Slow and move up.
Yes, and they have to get involved, and they have to understand realistically what the appropriate expectations are. You know, there's no cure, George. There's no marker for the diagnosis. There's no marker for treatment response.
So you can't just do a blood test.
I wish.
And do they have to get CTs or MRIs or things like that to?
I do frequently order an MRI scan of their brain to rule out migraine mimics. You know, maybe they could have something wrong that would masquerade as a migraine type headache, but those are frequently normal.
So those are expected to be normal, and then you say, okay, it's a migraine, now we can proceed.
Absolutely.
Okay. And then your medications to abort a migraine, is that some shot, Imitrex or some shot like that?
Absolutely. It can be a shot or a pill. And Imitrex was the first triptan drug. That's a class of migraine-specific medications that came out around the time we first met, George, in 1992.
Been that long.
It's been that long.
So,
and it came out in injection first, and then a couple years later,
is there a
tablet.
Is there a tablet?
There's okay. A tablet, and then in 97, a nasal spray came out, and then 98, we started getting other triptan tablets.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. Do those go under the tongue, or do they swallow them?
None of them are under the tongue because they're not absorbed through the oral mucosa. The molecule's okay. Too big in the triptan class. But we do have dissolvable tablets.
Okay.
And they dissolve in the mouth but are absorbed in the GI tract. It just allows the patient sometimes to take their medication without liquid.
Okay, and it's just as fast, or is
yes.
it slower than the shot?
All the tablets are significantly slower than the shot.
Mm-hmm.
We even have nasal sprays, which are faster than tablets, but not quite okay. as fast as the mm-hmm. injection.
Okay.
But the tablets that dissolve aren't any faster than the ones that don't dissolve.
And what? That's good. Mm-hmm. What about the prophylactic treatment? What? This is fairly new.
The Botox is fairly new. It's FDA approved about 6 years ago now. But we've had a lot of oral prophylactic treatments right. that have been used, and a few of them are FDA approved. Blood pressure medications, antidepressants, mm-hmm. anticonvulsants, those are the mainstay of oral prophylactic prescribed medications. And then we have these natural treatments, or we call alternative treatments, like butterbur herb and feverview, mm-hmm. magnesium, vitamin B2, and sometimes those help prophylactically too.
Okay. And if someone wants to come see you, we're going to put the number under the screen here. Steve Landy, thank you very much for being here, my guest today. And next time on In Depth TV, we'll talk more about your health. Thank you.